Have you ever heard of Thomas Smallwood? He's not exactly a household name, but as an enslaved person turned abolitionist, he played a fascinating role in the fight for African-American freedom in the 19th century. Smallwood's story is told in the new book, Flee North, A Forgotten Hero and the Fight for Freedom in Slavery's Borderland by Scott Shane. Scott was a reporter for 15 years at the New York Times, where he was twice a member of teams that won Pulitzer Prizes, and before that, for 21 years at the Baltimore Sun. Here he is to share five key insights from his book.
I'm Scott Shane, the author of a new nonfiction book about the Underground Railroad and the domestic slave trade called Flee North, A Forgotten Hero and the Fight for Freedom in Slavery's Borderland. I was a reporter for 40 years for the Baltimore Sun and the New York Times, and the book grew out of my shock at learning many years ago that slave traders had operated a thriving business for half a century around Baltimore's very pleasant, touristy inner harbor. As I pursued my research, I made some discoveries that have changed forever my understanding of this country's racial history. I'd like to share some central insights from the book. Insight number one, Thomas Smallwood is the most important and fascinating African-American activist and writer you've never heard of. As I dug into old newspapers, 19th century books, and archival documents, I had the incredible good luck of discovering the little-known Smallwood, who quickly became the most important of the three major characters in my book. Smallwood was born into slavery just outside Washington, D.C. in 1801. He bought his own freedom over time, and by age 30 he was free and self-educated, working as a shoemaker and raising a family in southeast Washington near the Navy Yard. He was burning with indignation against the institution of slavery when he met a younger white abolitionist from New England named Charles Torrey at the beginning of 1842. The two men decided to take direct action. They began helping people escape from Washington, Baltimore, and the surrounding counties, an illegal and highly dangerous operation. Whenever possible, they sent people north not in ones and twos, but by the wagon load. Not only did Smallwood organize the escapes, I discovered, he wrote about them too, in dispatches to an abolitionist newspaper in Albany, New York, which was on their escape route north. These letters, which I retrieved from a stack of old newspapers in a Boston Public Library warehouse, are an extremely rare real-time account of escapes from slavery, using the real names of both the slaveholders and the people fleeing from them. They're written in a sometimes scathing, sometimes hilarious style, mocking the enslavers, celebrating the people escaping, and I really think they add up to a remarkable literary achievement and a unique American masterpiece of satire. Insight number two. It was Thomas Smallwood who seized upon the term Underground Railroad for escapes from slavery and was the first to use it in print. This is a fun story, and it's also the solution to a 180-year-old mystery, since historians have never before known where the name of the Underground Railroad came from. Here's what happened. A notorious Baltimore police constable, who made much of his income capturing people running from slavery, was overheard expressing his mystification that so many people were getting away. And of course, a lot of them were getting away with Smallwood's help. This constable declared that the damned rascals must be escaping by Underground Railroad or steam balloon because he couldn't find a trace of them. Of course, there were no underground railroads in 1842. This constable was referring to a non-existent mode of transportation, the way we might say people were teleported to another city or abducted by aliens. But Smallwood loved this idea. It was a backhanded compliment to his escape operation, after all. And he began to riff on the idea of an underground railroad that was carrying people out of slavery. In his newspaper dispatches, he sarcastically advised slaveholders whose walking property had walked off, as he put it, to inquire at the office of the Underground Railroad in Washington for word of where their enslaved workers might have gone. He appointed himself general agent of all the branches of the National Underground Railroad. My search of the big collections of historical newspapers that are now online showed that Smallwood was indeed the first to use the phrase, and that others picked it up over the next year or two, and eventually the phrase became shorthand for escapes from slavery, especially those with outside help. But here's what I find especially notable about this discovery. In the nearly two centuries since, the Underground Railroad has been celebrated in books and movies, taught in schools, and it's become part of the folklore of many old houses and churches. That's certainly in part because it gives Americans a kinder, gentler way of talking about slavery, one in which white people are not exclusively villains. So it is striking to discover that at its origin, the phrase Underground Railroad was a way of mocking and lambasting the white slaveholders and the slave catchers, including the police, who served them. The term began as a lash in Smallwood's ironic language that he used on the white supporters of slavery. Insight number three. Most Americans have little understanding of the domestic slave trade, its nature, or its scale. My frustration about this is really what drove me to start working on this book. When I say domestic slave trade, you probably think about auction blocks and people being sold from farm to farm. In fact, the domestic slave trade was a major American enterprise that in the 50 years before the Civil War forced about 1 million people from the Upper South and border states to the Deep South, often separating children from parents and husbands from wives in the process, in most cases forever. It was one of the biggest forced migrations in world history, and for decades after the Civil War, black families would place ads in newspapers searching for loved ones lost to the slave trade. The domestic trade took off after the African slave trade was banned by Congress at the beginning of 1808. There was huge demand for labor on the cotton plantations and sugar plantations in the Deep South, while there was a labor surplus in the mid-Atlantic as tobacco farming declined. Slave traders like Hope Slatter, who is the villain of my book, made fortunes as the middlemen buying people in the Upper South and delivering them to the Deep South. Some slave traders marched people south for hundreds of miles, chained together in what were called coffles, lines of men shackled together, followed by women and children, usually unchained and on foot. But Slatter, like many other traders, shipped by sea. He accumulated people in his private slave jail at the Baltimore's harbor, and when he had a shipload, he sent them south by ship to New Orleans, where his brother oversaw what they called their showroom, where the enslaved were put on display and sold into the factory farms producing cotton and sugar. Insight number four. The Underground Railroad was in large part a response to the domestic slave trade. People ran north to avoid being sold south. People enslaved in the Upper South, including the Mid-Atlantic, were faced with two opposite possibilities. They could choose the quite terrifying risk of trying to flee north, or they could remain in slavery and know that on any day, without warning, they could be sold south. My book is really built around this existential dilemma, which Thomas Smallwood understood very well. He wrote that many of the people who came to him for help escaping north did so because they feared they were in imminent danger of being sold south. They may have heard a rumor to that effect. Maybe they found out their enslaver was short of cash, or perhaps their slaveholder was on his deathbed or had just died, making sale of the enslaved likely. Or the enslaver might have simply come out and openly threatened them with sale. "I'm going to put you in my pocket," was the way the slaveholders often worded it. The Underground Railroad and the domestic slave trade were deeply entangled. If a person got up the nerve to run for the Pennsylvania line and got caught, as happened frequently, the standard response from the enslaver was to sell them to a slave trader. So they faced the very fate they were trying to escape. In Baltimore City Jail, there were always prisoners on what was called the runaway docket. And the runaway docket was a lucrative source for Hope Slatter's business. Slaveholders who decided they could no longer trust their enslaved workers not to try to run again would simply send a note to Slatter at his Inner Harbor office, and his men would stop by the city jail to collect the inmates for shipment to New Orleans. Insight number 5. The power and tenacity of white supremacy and privilege play out throughout the story of my book's three characters, Thomas Smallwood, his white sidekick Charles Torrey, and their mortal enemy, the slave trader Hope Slatter. Smallwood was a shrewd observer of what would later be called racism, and he understood from experience that free blacks like him were unable to exercise anything like full citizenship. There were many laws passed by Maryland and applied in D.C. to restrict the activities of free African Americans, from requiring that they notify the authorities before traveling out of state, to requiring that all black people, enslaved or free, obey a 10 p.m. curfew or face jail, fines, or whipping. Racism infected even the most fervent white opponents of slavery. A particularly painful discovery in researching my story was that Charles Torrey never publicly acknowledged Smallwood's central role in the escapes they helped organize, and which Smallwood continued on his own for more than a year after Torrey left Washington. Torrey actually took credit for Smallwood's achievements, and Torrey was the subject of two biographies, one published just after his death, and another in recent years. Smallwood, by contrast, has been largely left out of historians' accounts of abolitionism and the Underground Railroad, and he's even missing from books devoted to black abolitionism. And while it's a footnote to my story, the slave trader Hope Slatter had a son and namesake, Hope Slatter Jr., who was convicted of murdering a man in Washington in the 1870s. But his family bribed the prosecutor to get him a new trial, and eventually he won a presidential pardon. And astonishingly, some years after his murder conviction and the bribery episode, Slatter Jr. became police chief of Mobile, Alabama. One can only imagine what a black man who committed murder in the 1870s and then tried to bribe his way out of prison might have faced. That detail has stuck with me as an especially stark example of the racist culture that we struggle with to this day. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Scott. That was Scott Shane with five big ideas from Flee North, A Forgotten Hero and the Fight for Freedom in Slavery's Borderland. You might also like our book bite for Teaching White Supremacy, America's Democratic Ordeal and the Forging of Our National Identity by Donald Iacovone. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.